kindness to your enemies is one way to ask for trouble. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. Actually, let me rephrase that. Welcome to my dojang. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and this is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm here today to celebrate International Taekwondo Day with my review of When Taekwondo Strikes, starring the Grandmaster himself, Jun Rhee. So, let's dive right into this. So, this past week was International Taekwondo Day, and for those of you who don't know, Taekwondo is my first love. That was the first martial art I ever trained in. I still, despite the criticisms that come with modern Taekwondo, I still have a deep love for the martial art, and so I felt it was very necessary here to celebrate this year, and to celebrate with the review of a movie that, if you've never heard of the movie, you probably think this is going to be a joke, right? That title, right? When Taekwondo Strikes. It sounds cheesy. And if you don't know who Jun Rhee is, you know, I don't blame you. But this movie, having watched it and sat with the history surrounding this movie, it's definitely not on the same level as Enter the Dragon, Ip Man, Drunken Master, but it's close. It was enough. This movie is so much of a mandatory watch that I decided after this movie that I would sit down and make a playlist on Captivate of the movies from this first year. Our birthday is tomorrow. Kung Fu Pizza Party's birthday is literally tomorrow, folks. And the one-year anniversary special will be coming out here shortly this month. And so I decided I would sit down and I would make a list of the most iconic films of the first year, right? Just so that way people can have like a quick reference of, hey, these are the ones, if you've never seen it, you need to stop sleeping on this movie and go check it out. And that's definitely the case here with When Taekwondo Strikes. And I have so much to say about this movie, especially when it comes to the history surrounding it, that I need to get on with things here. I'm losing daylight because here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. So let's get into it. The year is 1972. We are jumping in for what could possibly be the longest Kung Fu movie cinema history lesson I've ever done here on the show. The year is 1972, and Bruce Lee, yes, that Bruce Lee, not one of the clones, but the actual one, goes to his good buddy Raymond Chow of Golden Harvest to pitch the idea of doing a movie that would be primarily focused on showcasing Taekwondo. Now, this was a pretty good idea, because by this point, Golden Harvest, a Hong Kong-based film company, was primarily making kung fu movies, like all the other rival companies were doing at the time. So here, let's do a movie that showcases something else, because I don't know how much you know about Taekwondo, but it's not from Hong Kong, it's Korean. So it's going to be different. However, the diversity aspect of the fighting is not really the main reason why Bruce Lee is pitching this idea. It's to get his good buddy an acting job. That's why Bruce Lee is pitching this idea. Enter Grandmaster Jun Rhee. Jun Rhee immigrated to the United States in 1950 and began teaching Taekwondo when he arrived. Rhee is considered the father of American Taekwondo and a pioneer in the system as a whole. By the end of his life, he would earn the rank of 10th degree black belt, which is a grand master status. There is no higher rank within Taekwondo than to hit that degree. And along with his training in Taekwondo, he also trained in Tong Sudo, another Korean martial art, and a little-known martial art known as Junfan Gong Fu, which was, of course, the first martial arts system that Bruce Lee was teaching. This is the predecessor, or at least the early groundwork, for what eventually would become Jeet Kune Do. Jun Ri trained under Bruce Lee in Gongfang Kung Fu, or Zhanfang Kung Fu, and Bruce Lee trained under Master Ri in Taekwondo. So Bruce Lee is just trying to get his buddy an acting job. And Jun Ri never really considered going into film, but when the call came in 1973, he accepted. And he actually also developed the basic plot line of When Taekwondo Strikes, a movie that would follow a group of Korean rebels led by Jun Ri, who are living in Korea during the Japanese occupation of Korea during World War II, making this film at a very, very base level similar to Bruce Lee's movie Fist of Fury, which chronicles the Japanese occupation of Hong Kong. When Taekwondo Strikes would mark the one and only film appearance of Jun Ri, and for good reason. You may have noticed what year I noted earlier, 1973. Yes, sadly, not too long after When Taekwondo Strikes came out, we would learn of the tragic passing of Bruce Lee. And Jun Ri saw how the passing of Bruce Lee affected his family and decided that it would be best if he did not go into acting. Along with Jun Ri, this When Taekwondo Strikes being his one and only film appearance, this movie also marks the debut appearance of Anne Winton, the co-star of this film. Anne Winton, both in real life and in the film, was a student of Jun Ri, training in Taekwondo. She was very vocal about the representation of women in martial art media, and this movie actually marks the first time in Hong Kong film history that a Caucasian woman martial artist was playing a role in a film. So this movie in of itself, when it comes to female representation in martial art media, is a very historic film. We have both the making this a historic moment with the appearance of Grandmaster Jun Ri and a historic appearance as it is the first time a female Caucasian martial artist is in a movie. Now, also, sadly, we will not know what Anne Winton thinks of the current state of women representation in martial art media because, tragically, she was murdered by her husband in 1982. One last bit, just to try and kind of bring us back to a little bit of a happier note, maybe, after two kind of devastating blows back-to-back with this history lesson. Again, you caught the date, 1973, and the production company, Golden Harvest, so you can very easily guess who is also in this movie. Yes, buried somewhere within the amount of stuntmen is Sammo Hung and Yuen Bio. And actually, Sammo Hung is also credited with being the fight director for this film. And boy, did he pour his heart into this movie when it comes to the fight sequences. A lot of really good fight sequences in this movie. My favorite one was the fact that early on in this movie, Jun Ri is working with a local Catholic priest whose niece is Anne Winton, Anne Winton's character. And so a lot of the early, really like the first third of the movie is spent inside of this church. And so there's all these great fight sequences taking place in this church. For all of us who grew up in church, they do the thing that we all have secretly wanted to do. They're running across the tops of the church pews, having fights, standing and balancing on top of the church pews. It's somewhat reminiscent of both Master of the Flying Guillotine. There's a whole fight scene where people are fighting standing on top of pegs, and there's like spears sticking out of the ground. Or in Ip Man 2, when Sammo Hung and Donnie Yen are fighting on that table that's like wobbling the whole time. It's every church kid's dream to have ran across the top of the pews and to even balance and fight someone on top of it as well. But the fight choreography goes to even greater lengths at different points. This movie does a great job showcasing the precision, high-flying kicks of Taekwondo. You can tell the difference, or at least I can tell the difference that, like, oh, these people are doing Taekwondo, and they're emphasizing how crisp and accurate the kicks are in this movie, as opposed to how other kung fu movies depict fight sequences. Another interesting thing about this movie is the use of camera angles. I know this is a cliche, but there are aspects of the camera work in this movie that is ahead of its time, or at least very different and experimental compared to a lot of other movies at the time. Again, it's 1973. Drunken Master is going to come out like 10 years later, over 10 years later. And there's stuff they're doing in this movie with the camera work that actually it looks better than what they do in Drunken Master. Obviously, this same year is when Enter the Dragon comes out, and Enter the Dragon has the whole famous mirror fight sequence. There's nothing to the scale of that, but they definitely, again, they're getting creative with how they are shooting the fight scenes. One of the great examples of this, they do it a lot, so it does get a little tasking at some points. But one of the big ones is anytime there is a takedown, someone is being thrown to the ground, the camera rolls to the side along with the person being thrown to the ground. So it ends up when the person hits the ground, the camera is like sideways. So it's a cool visual. It happens a lot. So it gets a little like, okay, this is starting to feel more gimmicky than anything else. But it was different. It's unique. There's other angles in how the film is shot, upwards, downwards, at different sides. That, again, it's not necessarily the more straight-on shots that you see in a lot of these 70s and 80s even kung fu films. One of my other favorite works of cinematography in this film actually comes with a bit of a like symbolic meaning behind it. So one of the other women who are training in Taekwondo, Junri's sister in the film, she is attacked by Japanese swordsmen, and she gets her hands on one of these katanas and starts sword fighting. So you have this great like Korea versus Japan in the Japanese element, you know, Taekwondo versus Aikido, and here the Taekwondo person is going to take on the sword of Japan and ends up winning. She wins this fight. I don't think, unless you're like really engrossed in World War II history, I don't think we quite understand the what was going on there with the Japanese occupation of these different countries during World War II. And sadly, a lot of what I have learned through that or about that time period isn't from school. It's through kung fu movies. It's through people who either remember it happening or had parents who lived through it, and just kind of the, you know, Japan is occupying a place that is not theirs and trying to take it over. And we have, some of us have problems with that in nowadays. You know, you look at like Russia and Hungary, or you know, the complicated but also not so complicated nature of the Israel-Palestine situation of like, you know, I don't, and as a white American. Like, I don't really even understand that because, you know, my people were the ones who did show up. Well, I guess I can't say that for certain, but, you know, the English were the ones who knocked out the Native Americans. We occupied their country and took it over. So it's like we don't quite understand it and we don't really talk about it too much in our educational system. And yet it's still going on today in other countries. And we kind of did that here. Like, you know, and it's this kind of goes back to, I promise I will get to the cool shot. It's worth the wait. This kind of goes back to that line I opened up with. This comes in early in the movie. Jun Ri says it to the priest, you know, and it's supposed to be reminiscent of Jesus's teaching of love your neighbors, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, the whole bit. And Ri's character basically brings to light the real world scenario that can come from that, that if you are going to love your enemy, to be kind to your enemy, that is inviting trouble. That is inviting your enemy to do more trouble to you. Actually, in this scene, just before Jun Ri says this line, one of the Japanese soldiers smacks him and he just keeps turning his cheek, which is another teaching of Jesus, to turn the other cheek if somebody is attacking you. Not so much physically like this, but kind of in like a persecution kind of way. And this movie shows the cost of not showing kindness to your enemy and not inviting them in for trouble and to actually stand against your enemy, which is the tension of being a martial artist or even just being like an ethical person who, you know, being a martial artist who is either ethical or religious or, you know, driven by morals and principles, whatever the case may be. Like, this shows that there's always a cost. Whether you want to stand upon principle of, no, I am going to win this person with kindness, I'm going to beat this person with love, or I'm actually going to dismiss kindness and stand and fight against my enemy for the greater justice of my people, that there's always a cost. People get tortured in this movie. Like, people get killed. This isn't like an everybody gets home safe kind of film. Like, it definitely still shows that there is a cost to stepping out away from kindness and into, I am going to fight for what I know is right. But I think this movie also shows that not so much that kindness is weakness, although I think you could make this argument, but that kindness does go so far that when it comes to injustice, there does come a point where, you know, you might have to stand a firmer ground than just being constantly slapped in the face. All of that to say that there's this really cool shot. So it's right when this sword fight, that's where I was at, right when this sword fight is going to begin between one of the practitioners of Taekwondo and like this group of Japanese swordsmen. She gets her hands on a katana. She begins unsheathing it. And the sword, she pauses, so the sword is like halfway out of the sheath. The sword is so shiny, you can very clearly see the reflection of her eyes in the blade. And that was a very cool visual. So at the end of the day, although when Taekwondo strikes is not necessarily on the same level as its contemporary Enter the Dragon, this is, I think, within its own right, a must-watch, and I'm looking forward to putting together a top 10 list of movies that you should watch based off of the movies I have covered so far within this first year of Kung Fu Pizza Party, and that will be out soon on Captivate, and I will post a link for it, so that way you can check it out, and, you know, hopefully you know, if you haven't seen any of these movies and you need something to watch, you can check it out for yourself. Would I watch When Taekwondo Strikes Again? That should be the title of the sequel that never happened. Would I again watch When Taekwondo Strikes? Yes, I would. Would I buy a physical media copy of it? I think I would as well. And if you want to know some more thoughts on what I thought of this movie, keep in mind, you can always follow the show on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza, P-R-T-Y, where you can get the reviews before the episode comes out. There's actually a review of a movie that's been sitting there for a minute. The episode hasn't come out yet because I'm recording with some guests for that one. So you get spoilers if you follow Kung Fu Pizza Party on Letterboxd. Keep that in mind. Well, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And once again, a happy International Taekwondo Day to you all. And an early happy birthday to you listeners. We have done it. We've gone around the sun together. What do you know? And the show is still standing. Thank you all for listening. If you haven't yet already, please pass this episode along to a friend. Maybe your friend who loves Taekwondo. Or maybe your friend who hates Taekwondo. Either way, make them listen to it. You can also follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party. Check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. And check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, like Why I Don't Like, Systematic Geekology, Friday Night Frights, and of course my sister show, My Seminary Life, where I talk about all things faith and theology and ethics and philosophy and all that kind of stuff. If you're looking for a little bit more of that wisdom slice part, keep in mind there is a t-shirt sale going on and it's going to be wrapping up here pretty soon. bonfire.com/2025kungfu. You can find a link for it in the description of this episode. Once that anniversary show comes out, the sale is over, the shop is gone, the t-shirts and hoodies and crew necks will no longer be available, so get them while they're hot. And you know what? Take a picture of yourself and post it, tag the show, I'll share it on our story, just that way we can, I can promote these. I'm very proud, it's a very simple design, but I'm very, very proud of it. It's very, very, very cute, very simple, it's very, very good, very evil, very demure, all that good stuff. And I think that's it by way of plugs. I am so excited for when this one-year anniversary special does come out because there's a lot of things in the work for year two. New guests, new specials, new events. Hello, even that. It's going to be a lot of fun. But until then, this has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less of the Taekwondo variety this time, and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.